Nick, 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 Nick,
Nickelodeon!
From Nickelodeon Animation in Burbank, California, this is the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Hector Navarro, and we have got a really cool episode for you today. We're in a really exciting position to share with you guys a brand new show that hasn't aired yet, but already has a presence online, which is kind of part of the show itself. Pinky Malinky is the brand new show from Nickelodeon about an enthusiastic wiener named Pinky and his two best friends, Babs and JJ. And even though Pinky Malinky is a wiener, he's really only one letter away from being a winner. We're so lucky to be able to talk to the creators of Pinky Malinky, Chris Garbutt and Ricky Asbjorn. You're working on the show, you're deep in the world, and the world has yet to really experience the show. How are you guys feeling right now?
Impatient.
Yeah, I mean, you want to get it out there. You want to show everyone what you've been making. But I think it's nice to have had all this time to kind of really dive into the show, get to know the characters, flesh out the world, and getting to a rhythm with making the show.
Yeah.
So I think once we do go out, we're going to have a lot of content to go out, so we can have a strong kind of release. But we'll have some really good episodes that we've had a lot of time to kind of dig into. And
let's talk a little bit about just animation as a whole. What are some of the stuff that you grew up with and loved as a kid? When did you get into animation? What got you into animation?
I mean, I'm a big Donald Duck fan. That's really where it all started for me. I grew up in the countryside in Denmark, so I didn't even think about the fact that people actually sat somewhere and made animation.
Yeah.
I guess you just thought, oh, that just appeared by magic. Yeah.
You sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Donald was just a real guy. Yeah. We're just, you know, we're just watching his life. Yeah.
I remember the moment where I was like, wait, this is a job? Because my stepmom, she cut out an article from a magazine saying, look at this.
Yeah.
There's a Danish girl who got a job at Disney. And I think I was 12 years old. And I was like, what? A job at Disney? So that means that people actually sit and do this stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my mind is blown. And that was the moment where I was like, okay, now I know what I want to do.
What was it about Donald Duck that you loved as a kid?
He wears no pants.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, yeah.
That freedom.
Yeah. I don't know. I think he was just more raw and honest than the other ones. It always annoyed me when I'm not a big Mickey Mouse fan at all.
You're like, Mickey, that's not how you really feel. Come on,
let us go. That angry duck in the corner. I like him.
You certainly share that side.
So yeah, anger. I can relate to him a lot more.
Yeah. What about you, Chris? What kind of stuff did you love growing up?
I mean, obviously, like Tom and Jerry, Warner Brothers, Daffy Duck, Bugs Bunny, all the Tex Avery stuff.
They
were so accessible as a kid, and just loved that, all of that kind of thing. I was very heavily influenced by a comic called The Beano, which is a British comic, which I don't know how many people really know over here, but that was a huge influence on me growing up, and me and my brother used to make our own comics and all that kind of thing. So from a very early age, I was coming up with my own characters, drawing stuff, so it kind of was inevitable that I wouldn't be able to do anything else apart from apart from that. As well as that, like on in the summer holidays, in the morning, on a Saturday morning, you'd have just this block of programming where it was like all kinds of different cartoons, and that always interested me. You'd have like He-Man next to Wacky Races.
Yeah.
Just whatever, just kind of bunched together. It was just this whole like smorgasbord of amazing, silly, fun cartoons, and it wasn't always about like how beautiful the animation was. It was just about how much fun you were having watching these things. So, I mean, obviously I can appreciate amazing animation, like Studio Ghibli, obviously Disney, Pixar, everyone like that does wonderful stuff. But
that
at the same time,
later though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, started with all the funny little quirky ones.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you could call it trash, but I like sometimes like the trashy side of animation, which I don't like calling it trash because I love it, but it's a lot of people within the industry would kind of see it that way. Stuff like He-Man, Thundercats, things like that, which is just great, great fun.
Yeah.
I think there's room for all of that.
Definitely.
Need some diversity.
Obviously, all the Hanna-Barbera stuff.
Love it.
The same Scooby-Doo, Wacky Races, all that kind of thing, which as someone who works in the animation industry, again, people can think that's a bit kind of lower quality, but the stuff they were pioneering in regards to like limited animation for television, for me,
absolutely,
that's more interesting than just having the money to be able to do what you want. And I guess I couldn't move on without mentioning Ren and Stimpy as well, which I think,
of course,
there's so many people in the industry nowadays who are influenced by that show, which was obviously influenced by the old Warners,
totally,
things like that, and Hanna-Barbera, their approach to animation.
Do you remember where you were the first time you guys saw Ren and Stimpy, like where you were and what you thought?
I was a student and I was drunk and I was watching that show with my friends and loving it. So you kind of tapped into
that sounds like a good time.
Inebriated corners of my brain.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know how I could tell that you guys are a good couple? Because we've got the love of Donald over here, the love of Daffy over here. That's like that's like best of both worlds right there. So I'm sure that your favorite scene in Who Framed Roger Rabbit is when they're dueling piano, because it's so good. People that are listening and they might not be familiar with Pinky Malinky, can you guys tell us about the show?
Well, Pinky is a 13-year-old hot dog sausage.
13 forever.
Yeah. He's a little boy, but
he happens to be a hot dog as well. And you know, that's not a problem for him. It's just...
And he lives in our world, so it's obviously a world of humans, and he's the only sausage there, and that kind of makes him stand out a little bit, makes him a bit special. And some people might see that as a problem, but he kind of takes a positive stance, like thinking that a wiener is only one letter away from being a winner. And that's kind of his mantra, if you like. That's sort of sums him up. I guess the show itself is, that's kind of the theme. It's about
embracing differences.
Yeah. And championing people who do feel different.
And also, almost everyone has probably felt like a bit of a wiener at some point.
Yeah.
But, you know, he literally looks like one as well.
And the show itself, I guess, is a little bit different to a regular cartoon, because we approached it in a documentary format.
Yes.
So it's kind of documentary reality show kind of thing. So we have a camera crew that follows Pinky and his friends around, like at school, at home, just their everyday lives. So it allowed us to kind of approach in a very different way in regards to filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Like we had to be very conscious about how we use the camera to sell the believability of like that documentary format. So the stuff that we can't do, like we can't have the camera just like flying through the air, following characters like in crazy different action shots.
Yeah.
You can't have like POV shots. Yeah. We kind of purposefully limited ourselves to really try and sell that format.
Yeah. Which has definitely been a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, I think we're at a place now where all our board artists and directors, they're getting really good at it and coming up with some really interesting solutions for things. Because I think in the beginning, it was probably like, okay, we only have 3 shots we can do. So what are we going to do? But then all of a sudden you start thinking, no, you know, we can put cameras in all these places. And then there's security cameras and
GoPros
and all kinds of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things when you start thinking about it. You just have to be creative in a new way.
Definitely. And like our supervising director in the first season, Matt Lazell, and now in the second season, Megan Dong, have really kind of led the storyboard team and the directors into how to approach that and how to be as creative as possible with that.
Cool. Very cool.
Then our supervising director for the social media content, Sean Sharmatz, was again very, very smart in how he wanted to approach the camera and how everything is shot on that side of things as well. So,
which has really helped influence the episodes, like all the stuff that he did, because he really nailed all of
exactly. And it's developed its own, language, if you like, which is really good. And that's helped make the show feel different and unique.
Is that kind of stuff, how baked into the script and the sort of initial ideas for the cartoons, for the episodes, is that in there, or are those kinds of things figured out and problem solved at the storyboarding stage visually? Like,
there's no script to start with.
Yeah, really?
It's a board-driven show, so it's from outlines.
Awesome.
But we always try and consider that format from the start. I mean, first of all, you want to get a story, like a good, strong story, character-driven story in there. And then as you're developing that, you try and figure out how you would approach that with the specific cameras and all that kind of thing in mind.
But again, I think, as we've gone along, we've put more suggestions into the writing as well, because in the beginning it was probably more like a traditional outline, and then as we see stuff and get more and more ideas, we're like, oh, this would be a good place for a little sequence of videos, or
like B-roll footage, or cut to a YouTube clip, or just try and make it feel as multimedia as possible. Yeah.
Cut to those little sort of like the real world confessional sections. You talk to a character, which is so great. And
Yeah, the talking heads. We have a lot of them throughout the episode. And it helps. I mean, you have to be careful because sometimes it can get a bit too talky.
Yes.
And you have to be smart about how you use that. Obviously, it's a good way of getting some story points across, but you need to do it in a way that doesn't feel like you're doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was something we learned as well from the first maybe 10 episodes we did.
Yeah.
Then watching them back, it was like, oh, they're really standing still for too long. Yeah. We have to try and we have to solve that. Whisper rapping is really cool. Really cool. Really cool.
Whisper rapping is really cool. All day long. Let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to the first time you guys talked about even the idea of Pinky Malinky. Where did the idea come from? How did you guys come up with this?
Well, we've kind of been developing this idea for, well, it's been over 10 years now.
You drew a hot dog with eyes.
Yeah.
Basically. That was step one.
Yeah. The first thing that came was the name, and then from there just kind of doodling like a little hot dog character. Once myself and Ricky joined the Cartoon Network Development Studio in London, then that was a project that we kind of brought in there and we developed further between the two of us. Initially, he had a friend who was an onion, and they were two characters that lived in the countryside and they were moving to the big city. And the big city was like a big trash dump, if you like.
Yeah.
So all the characters in there would have been like all pieces of rubbish and all that kind of thing.
That onion basically eventually turned into Babs.
Yeah. And that's the thing. She went through
another few stages before she got there.
Totally. And that was the first very initial idea, which never really went anywhere. And then kind of took a different slant on it where the idea was Pinky was at school, and he woke up on his first day of high school to find out he was a hot dog sausage. So he was a human before that, and on his first day, like, oh my gosh, wiener.
Yeah.
And
that one was all about him
trying to become
a boy again.
Yeah.
But it just became very sad and depressing because he was just, he was such a whiny wiener.
Because the idea was that he was trying to become a human again, and he had to almost like convince everyone in school that he wasn't a wiener to be able to come be a human, which there's a weird kind of self-denial in there that just felt like a really sad story.
I think after we had worked on that and done like a short and stuff, I think we sat back and looked at it and went, oh, okay.
And then the next stage was from that short, we actually got picked up for further development to make a full-length like pilot animatic. And that it became like a heavy rock musical, the next thing.
So we've
been trying out a lot of different things. And that was still set at school, and it was the same kind of tact with Pinky, but his friend, who was an onion, was now like some kind of wish goblin.
Yeah, so this is Babs. First an onion,
then
a goblin. Wish goblin.
Yeah. That's development for you. So that's you try out some crazy stuff and you fail.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about, failing until you get it right.
That's why it's so nice to have lived with it for so long, because now it feels like it's really landed in the place where this is the best version of it and the one that we're happy with.
And because the last thing we did at Cartoon Network was this like teaser trailer, which is when we first adopted the documentary format, and we did a different take on Pinky at that point where he was much more positive. We came up with the thing like the wiener is only one letter away from winner, so it gave him a very specific positive attitude.
That was it started really changing, and like, oh, okay, now it's getting to a point where
it's feeling
it feels like it's finding itself.
And we made him the only non-human as well, which again sort of focused attention on him, which is the right kind of thing. So at that point it started to really feel right, and that's the thing that Nickelodeon picked up on, was that last short that we did at Cartoon Network. It was something that they were excited about, and eventually after a few years down the line, after we moved over here and worked at DreamWorks for a couple of years, then Nickelodeon picked us up for development here.
really great thing about Pinky Malinky is that it lives in the world of social media and it acknowledges it. I mean, it's our world that we live in today, but it's not common to have cartoon characters that you can follow on Instagram, which I think is really, really cool. So talk about at one point in the development process, did that idea come into your guys' head and you go, yeah, that needs to be a part of the show, or, oh, so cool, this can be a part of the show. And what's it been like working with that?
That was really, as soon as we came to Nick, that was part of the plan very early on, that we thought, because it's a documentary and it's in a supposedly real world, that should be a huge part of it, because if they're 13-year-old kids, then they would have Instagram accounts and whatever else there is. So just to make them feel more in touch with their fake reality.
When we first joined with Nickelodeon, we were part of the Artist Collective, which is like their development, in-house development team. And that was something that was always discussed. Like every Wednesday lunchtime, we'd have like a two-hour meeting where we get together, kind of talk about the projects we were doing, but also just talking about the world and animation and entertainment in general. Mm-hmm. And the thing that always came up was like how things are changing in regards to like viewers' habits, like what they're watching, where they're watching it, on what device they're watching it, all that kind of thing. And it, obviously, people are spending so much time on social media, Facebook, Instagram, everything like that. So it seemed like it would make sense to be trying to reach an audience on those platforms. Yeah, so
it didn't make sense to just restrict yourself to TV anymore.
You can't do that anymore. You have to think bigger. And I think Nickelodeon is starting to do that and is getting successful with that. But I feel like we can push that even further because, again, the audience is just used to watching stuff not traditionally on a network, on a kind of timed schedule.
Yeah.
And the more we adapt to that, the better, I think. We've got the content to do that, but I think it can be pushed even further.
Yeah. I feel like there's a risk involved, though, too, whenever you deal with technology, because we were talking about this before it started, like Vine isn't around anymore. So is there like a scary, like, okay, like we're really going in on, you know, on this thing that people will be able to find these little shorts and these characters, but like it might not be around in 2-3 years? I don't know.
There's
like,
definitely a fear of that. And also, will it be relevant?
Sure.
Yeah.
Like the kind of shorts that we're doing right now, will they even... will it just look like old news by the time that they come out?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel in regards to where you put it, as long as your content is fairly agile, you can move with the audience. Yeah, definitely the content of your content, if that's not feeling kind of to date and all that kind of stuff, it's that is a bit worrying. But all you can do is kind of make what you're doing at the time, and hopefully it will stand the test of time.
Yeah, and just try to think about things that will always be funny, like shouting cats.
Hey, it's Pinky, and sometimes I laugh like this. And sometimes like this. And even like this. Whoa, weird.
Tell us about Pinky, tell us about this guy. How is he so enthusiastic? What is this guy's deal?
Well, I mean, Pinky was a kid who was almost embarrassed about being a wiener, and he wanted to change that. And that was like very early on. And we've really kind of gone 360 with that. And the fact that he is proud of that, he embraces that, he champions that kind of thing. And for me, it all stems from when we landed on that one little phrase of a wiener is only one letter away from being a winner. They seem to kind of, it's like that, the thing, the elevator pitch that everyone talks about. It's just being able to sum something up so quickly that sells the theme of the show, sells the character, the personality and everything. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was a defining moment of really sending Pinky on his way in regards to the right personality.
We also got to a point where it was, is he just too positive all the time? Is he perfect now?
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, let's start using it in a way where his own enthusiasm actually gets in the way of what he wants to do sometimes, because he takes things too far. He takes it beyond the breaking point.
Yeah. Because I guess a character that is so positive all the time can get very annoying. So we need a character that has flaws, has a very human side to them that you can relate to and get behind and laugh at and enjoy.
That wiener is very human. Very human wiener.
Something that we've been playing with a lot is trying to deal with different emotions can be really funny, because like sarcasm or like jealousy, and just things that he finds, for him, they're not natural feelings because he has that very positive outlook.
Yeah.
So it's really funny to see him struggle with that and just kind of wrap his brain around, I don't understand what's happening to me at all, because surely it can't be. I mean, it's a negative emotion and I can't have that. Why would I have that?
Yeah, like the cranky episode where he wakes up in a bad mood and he's trying to do his best to be as smiley and happy throughout the day, but obviously he's just keeping it inside, and at some point it all has to come out.
Tell us a little bit about Babs. How did she sort of change? At one point she was an onion, you mentioned earlier.
She was an onion. A goblin, then she turned into
a boy,
and then she turned into Babs, which is
a girl.
Yeah.
I think for us, we always wanted a really strong female lead, and we wanted something that, again, not really seen as much of in animation. Like, you often see, when you go for a strong female lead, they're normally kind of the sassy tomboy kind of thing.
Or very girly.
Yeah. So we wanted something different. I actually wanted a girl character that would be funny, like genuinely funny.
Yeah.
And I hope that's coming across, but that's what we always try to push for. Someone who feels very comfortable in her own skin.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
She's just a human being. She's not like... And we play up on that a lot as well whenever there's any questions or anything that come up with, like, you know, JJ can be really vain, but she's like, I'm just, you know, I like my hair. Just knows what length to be.
Yeah.
What's the problem?
She's confident in herself.
Pinky's been acting weird all day.
So we brought some free ice cream over to surprise him.
You know, this morning he asked if he was AU. I don't know what that is.
That's cute in Korean. I know the word for cute in every language. I also know every word for poison.
You said he might be a little bit vain. I think J.J. Jameson is the coolest. I think J.J. is one of the coolest
Don't tell
characters.
Him that.
I know, because it'll go to his head. He thinks.
He thinks he is
and
as
I,
well.
And I think he also is, but I like you said, Chris, I don't want to tell him because I don't want it to go to his head. But tell us a little bit about J.J. Has J.J. changed from any initial concept into where he is now?
I mean,
he was actually the latest addition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We never had JJ in the show until like the more recent development.
He was born at Nickelodeon.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, that's so nice to say.
I don't know. I think we had stuff in mind that we wanted for JJ, and he was kind of playing up on the fact that he's 11 months older, so he's kind of always takes the I'm the kind of wise leader in a way role. And I think, I mean, what I really love is the fact that all of our writing team, the board arts director, supervising director, everyone like that, as well as Nathan, who plays the character, like, everyone brought so much of themselves to this character that I feel they rounded him out even more than we did.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They really brought him to life because we really only started playing around with him in the boards.
So it's been really interesting to watch him grow and evolve
He does have a lot of those like over the top JJ moments where he's just a bit like, okay, trying to be the coolest guy, but he's ultimately there for his friends when it comes down to it.
When I first met Pinky, I was all like, but then we hang and I'm like, that's my boy for life. No, wait, sorry, let me do that again. I do it better. Hold on. Bring it back, JJ. Bring it back. Bring it back, JJ. Bring it back. Bring it back, JJ. Bring it back. Bring it back.
What changes did those people that you guys mentioned make to the character of JJ? What kind of contributions went into that?
A lot of very small, subtle things, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the way that he'll gesture and the way he'll talk and like catchphrases and
Definitely dialogue stuff really helped.
All kinds of little things and
it's literally giving him a voice.
Some of it will just be from a few drawings as well where you're like, oh, that attitude, that's so JJ. And all of a sudden you'll just have like a whole library of that's JJ.
But
and that really comes from the team just like throwing themselves into it. And
I mean, they've obviously also done that with Pinky and Babs, but you can see it the most with JJ, I think.
Yeah, because I think there was less there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And something else I think was really important with him, because he could have turned into a bit of an unlikable character, because there's that whole, like, cool, trying to be cool side of him.
The king of selfies,
Exactly. But I think what everyone added to him was the vulnerability, like seeing the side of him where he is kind of very self-conscious and he doesn't have that confidence, and other little quirky things like the fact that he's got a crush on Pinky's mum and just stuff like that that adds another
so many levels. Yeah,
exactly.
Because I think with Pinky and Babs, we always knew, oh, this is how they would talk and this is how they would reply, and it's like, no, that Babs would never say that, and she would, you know, this is a bit too sweet for her and too easy, you know, she would be more, it'd be more quirky coming from her. So that was always, that always came really easy to us. I mean, and obviously they've still helped with those characters and just made them even better.
Definitely.
I love that JJ moment where he's laughing at something that Pinky's mom did. He's like, ha, 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 I love your mom. I love her. And he has this very real, like, it's so funny. Does dad have a, what's dad's first name? Because I know mom is Valerie, right? Mom is Valerie.
Dad is Eric.
Eric.
They're named after my mom and dad.
Are they based off of your mom and dad?
Not like your mom and dad at all.
Obviously, you can't help but bring those influences in there. And yeah, all the good stuff is based on my mom and dad.
Nice. Good save. Good save. That's great.
But Valerie, she's the kind of...
Well, she inspired us a lot as well.
With,
you know, she's just really down to earth and comes across like a very, like, you know, speak her mind and very honest.
And she runs Crumbell's, which is the bakery stroke gym in Second Heck. So one half of the... One half of it is a bakery, one half is a gym. People are eating cakes as they're doing, like, on the running machine, all that kind of thing.
Everyone loved this place. How do you do it?
Well, apart from the fact that I work real hard.
Yeah, you do.
The secret to my success is...
Ooh, secret! Okay, tell me now, please.
Pinky, whenever you do anything, put your own personal stamp on it. Make it your own. Maybes are for babies.
Let's talk a little bit about the character design and how that's evolved from the beginning as well. But how has that process been sort of developing along the way?
I guess, again, because we've had so long to work on it, it's something that has evolved and been refined as we've gone along. I mean, just talking about Pinky himself, there was always an intention to try and make him look different from everything around him. I mean, he's a sausage, which is one thing, but even in the design treatment, like he has shading on his sausagey body that kind of gives him volume. All the other characters are very flat 2D.
Yeah.
Like he has
to
that,
make
which.
Him stand out.
Exactly, exactly. And we kind of went through different processes of how to achieve that. I mean, initially, the first shot we did at Cartoon Network, all of that was achieved in Photoshop. So the animation would be done in Flash. Then I'd take that animation and frame by frame build those bodies with the shading in Photoshop, which was dumb.
That was actually at a point where we did all of it between us. So
Ricky's traditionally an animator.
And we'd send it back and forth so many times. And it was incredibly time-consuming. the files were huge, and it was a nightmare.
For what we were doing, but obviously it's not sustainable for production on a series. So as we developed further, we looked into, was it possible to build him in CG and go down that route, which we tried some experiments here, which looked cool, but it just didn't feel the right kind of thing, because we wanted the freedom to go very cartoony with his body, which if you're trying to build a rig in CG to achieve all that, it's be a crazy expensive rig, or it's just, you have to have loads of different models, and it just didn't seem sustainable for the kind of production that we needed.
Yeah, because we just end up losing too much of the subtlety of what we wanted, because there are a lot of really small bits of acting in there as well. That's really important. And I mean, obviously you can do that in CG, but I think that's a bit of a different budget, to be honest.
And even though we wanted a kind of 3D volumetric approach to his body, I still wanted a very, very graphic approach to all of the character design, and to achieve a very kind of stamped graphic look through CG, again, is a very, very hard, expensive thing to do. So.
But then we came across Harmony.
Yeah.
Because then that was starting to become more of a bigger thing, that, you know, different series were starting to use that. And it was like, okay, let's look into that and see if that would be something that could work for Pinky.
Yeah, I was going to say, the final product, he does look like he's almost like a CG character in this sort of different way. It really, really stands out in that way.
You'd have to speak to somebody from Gemfield in regards to technical details.
Sure.
I know you like the weekend, but I love Wednesdays. I know you like the weekend, but I love Wednesdays. I know you like the weekend. I know you like the weekend. I know you like the weekend, but I love Wednesdays.
Why is it so important for you guys to have music have the presence that it does in Pinky Malinky?
I think it's just always come natural for some reason, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think cartoons and music always is kind of a perfect marriage. You see, even back to the old, like, Warner Brothers, Tex Avery, Tom and Jerry, everything like that, the way the music works with the cartoons and the animation, it gives it a pace. And, when it's done right, it's great. It seems natural to really try and get that in there and have some musical numbers as well to... Sometimes they help get story across and they just help bring an extra kind of pace and phonetic energy to certain scenes.
Mm-hmm. But just, I mean, doing it in a bit of a different way as well, where it's, because in the social media shorts, there's a lot of musical numbers in that as well. So it's not just throwing a song into an episode. Yeah, it's using it more as a video or something often.
Or storytelling tool or even just for a gag or whatever it is.
So it's not just them breaking out into song for no reason.
Right.
Or in a traditional musical way. It's more like...
And there's a lot of times that we've not asked for that. And like the directors and the board artists have just gone ahead and like put songs in there.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, that works. So like, you just roll with it.
And cool.
I mean, you have to give a shout out to Megan Dong, who's now our surviving director, the amount of songs that she's done on this show.
And
one of them is amazing. Like, so catchy.
I know. There's going to have to be an album.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm okay with the way you are. I'm okay. I like you just the way you are.
When kids and families and adults and everybody, when they're watching an episode of Pinky Malinky, what do you hope that they take away from it? What are some of the things that you're excited to share with people?
In a lot of our episodes, there's a nice, hopefully subtle message, which if even a few people take that away from it, I'll be very happy.
Yeah, I mean, we always try and...
It has a real warmth to it, which
definitely.
Is something
warmth,
that's been...
heart.
Yeah, essential.
And we've really been pushing for diversity, as we were saying before, in regards to the cast, the characters, even on our crew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that whole kind of acceptance for people for who they are, no matter where they come from.
Yeah.
No matter the colour of their skin,
size, shape, colour, everything.
Yeah. I mean, that is the core theme behind Pinky, is this one little kid who's so different from everything around him, but he doesn't let that stop him and people embrace him and love him. And I think that's what we're really pushing for in the show.
Yeah, be nicer.
Yeah.
Well, I think you guys are doing something right. I really love the show. Can't wait for people to see it. It's so funny. So thank you again for coming in and chatting with us. This has been fantastic. It's been awesome. Thank you, guys. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, gentle listeners. That was our conversation with Pinky Malinky creators, co-executive producers, Chris Garbutt and Ricky Asbjorn. Huge thanks to them for coming in and talking to us. And if you are like me and you cannot wait for more Pinky Malinky, well, guess what? You can follow Pinky himself right now on Instagram. It's @Pinky_Malinky, and you should be doing it because Pinky's hilarious. Visit us online at nickanimationpodcast.com for more episodes and tons of cool bonus behind-the-scenes stuff and some rad stuff from Pinky Malinky, so be sure to check that out. Guys, you're not going to want to miss an episode of the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast, so please subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast from. Thanks to the awesome crew who puts this podcast together. This podcast is produced by Jonathan Highlander, Dana Vasquez Eberhardt, Tony Gutierrez, Jamie Goss, and Andrew Huebner. Original music by Useful Creatures. This week's episode edited by Jonathan Highlander and Josh Caldwell. Our social media team is Narbe Manassians, Sammy Armiger, and David Watson. Manny Grujava is our engineer and the man with a plan. Thank you, Manny. Until next time, thanks for listening to the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast, and keep watching cartoons.